Good day, fungal associates. Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson.
I'm another one of your hosts. My name is Casey Clapp. Good day to you, Alex. I see what you did there.
Good day to you, Case.
Yeah, we're talking about a tree from Southeast Asia today.
Or down under, as I like to say.
Is that offensive?
To call Australia Southeast Asia?
Yeah, like people sometimes refer to Portland as South Seattle.
Oh, and, I'm sure it would make a certain certain group of people upset.
Yeah, I'm sure. Sorry, everyone. You ever like try to look at things that way, Alex? Like trying to imagine, I don't know. Like we've talked a little bit about like continents, and I don't like referring to seven continents because Europe is very Eurocentric. They're acting like they're their own continent
when really they're just an extension of Asia.
I don't even think you can say an extension. Like it's all just.
Right.
Like, you know, maybe like if there's an isthmus, you know, like that, like a peninsula.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Then you could say, yeah, that's an extension of something.
Sure. But this is just part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I don't know. Is the West Coast an extension of the East Coast?
Right.
So anyway, yeah, I guess what I'm asking is if you ever feel like you specifically go out of your way to misdescribe something because you think it's funny.
Yeah. Okay. Or I'm making a point that I think, the boundaries are silly and arbitrary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I feel that way about the United States often.
Oh, God, yeah.
The states of the United States.
Like the South, you
right.
know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I also think, and this is a little related, but mostly unrelated, pride. Maybe we shouldn't even get into this because it's a whole different thing.
Uh-oh.
Let's go for it, though. Why not? This wasn't intended. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I think pride in something that you can control is very silly. For instance, I choose to go to Yale.
Okay.
Yale, therefore, is the best Ivy League school.
Oh.
And I'm proud to go to Yale. I'm a Yale man through and through. Oh,
okay, I think I see what you're saying.
I could have easily have chosen to go to Harvard, and then I would feel that way about Harvard.
Ah, so then it just switches.
Yeah.
So in contrast, you were born in Oregon here.
Right.
You would think that, yeah, that is a reasonable amount of pride. You're like, yeah, I'm proud of where I'm from, but you didn't necessarily get to choose where you're from.
Well, yeah, I can choose where I live now.
Yes.
But I guess I also have no pride in where I'm from. I have no pride in anything that, any external thing. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I guess it would be, so pride would come to you, and we should make a note for all the biblical followers out there that we're talking about like the maybe positive pride, not the like the seven deadly sins pride
one
here.
Of the sins.
You know? Yeah. So this is
next week we're talking about lust.
Oh, dude, we should do that.
Casey just lit up like a Christmas tree.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Imagine seven episodes where we just talk about how trees have, you know.
Hey.
Okay, Alex. All right. Quick switch.
This is a tangent off a tangent.
Yes. We'll get back to the first one in a second.
Okay.
But, you know, recently people have been, after Peter, I think it should be like Vollenbein's book, The Hidden Life of Plants.
Uh-huh.
He like talked about, you know, the feelings and all the things like trees communicate,
right.
And they, you know, love, and like he added all these dimensions to it.
Very anthropomorphic.
Yeah. And then there's another book that I read that's like what a tree knows, and talks about how, you know, can a tree see in like the five senses. So why don't we take that to like the opposite side? Like why do we need to keep like treating trees as like these amazing things? Like the Posonia, for instance, we could be like, well, that tree's kind of an asshole.
Right.
We could maybe do the seven deadly sins of trees and say, well, this is a lustful tree.
Ah.
Here's how we know. This is a slothful tree.
What is the most slothful tree?
Yeah, it's just some tree in South America that's literally filled with sloths.
We're being cheeky.
Yeah, everyone, hey, you know what? It's our choice. Okay, all right. Anyway,
that particular idea is some quintessential, completely arbitrary, low-hanging fruit, by
yeah,
the way.
Totally is. Yeah, that's exactly, that's all we need. Okay, but back to this. So you would have pride in something that's like made from you, like your music. You have pride in your music.
Exactly, Casey.
Hmm.
I am the master of my own domain when it comes to my music, right?
Nobody
else can do this.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
I have pride in
In your work.
I have pride in completely arbitrary.
Yeah, okay.
But you know, I went to the University of Oregon.
Yeah.
I don't give two shits about how their football team is doing.
Yeah.
Casey, you strike me as somebody who might be a little prideful, but really when you dig a little deeper, you're like, I don't really care.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like the Timbers, the soccer team here.
Totally.
Because I also went to U of O and then Oregon State and then UMass and NC State. And like I went to a bunch of schools.
There has to be a limit.
There's got to be a limit.
The amount of places you can have pride in.
I think so. There certainly should be. But then, so I hear you. I hear you here because I have pride in the Timbers, but it was at one point I didn't care about soccer at all.
Yeah.
And I actually got into it because I was living in Seattle and it was like my home team from where I'm from and where I love. And like, I am very proud of Portland, even though, you know, it's not necessarily something that I can control where I'm from, but I chose to live here because I like the ideals that they were working with and the way the city's set up. But yeah, now I really got to think about it because I also do. I have pride where if everyone's like, Casey, are you really upset? Like, how deep does this go? And I could be like, yes, at some point, I don't care how the Timbers are doing. It's nice when they win, but I do.
I mean, when I see the Raiders super fan, I'm like, well, if you were born in Dallas,
you'd be
a Cowboy fan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You would feel the same way about the Cowboys.
This is a very interesting philosophical debate. I wonder like what that means to them. Like if you really could dig in.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I think it has something to do. This is maybe I'm taking it too seriously or I'm extrapolating a little too hard.
Hey, this is your platform.
European Americans, we don't have a lot of culture.
Oh.
And I think regionalism
uh-huh.
and race is our like kind of low hanging fruit cultural identity
really?
Things.
Yeah,
so
I see.
I don't have a rich family history of cooking and religion. So
we are French and we've been doing it for the last 600 years.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Right. I'm Mexican. So I have all this, you know, I don't have an ofrenda to work with, you know, or I didn't have a quinceañera or whatever. So instead I get really into the Cowboys and I am racist.
Oh God.
Clipped.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is a,
sorry. I chose Texas as my go-to, my bad.
We love the Texans.
Sure.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, I think this is very curious. I think there's a lot here, and I'm very, honestly, it makes me want to hear some other perspectives of people who do have intense pride like
that. Yeah, of course,
Well, I mean, because I don't think it's fair to just pass that off as well, because I think it's fair to actually give someone, like, you are very prideful of that. Why is that?
Yeah.
Certain people, I'm sure, like me with Portland, I am very proud of this city, but also I'm not in some other ways.
There's plenty to be both proud of and not.
Yeah.
Also, I just want to say, this is my opinion. I know sometimes I say my opinions as if they're fact.
Your cone is your own cone,
Thank
Alex.
You. That's just how I say things.
Yeah, that's very fair.
Hey, Casey.
We're not talking about the seven deadly sins this week.
We may have tricked you because we spent 8 minutes talking about it.
We should do some Inception though, Alex. Real quick.
Uh-huh.
And do a series within a series.
Wow.
And make each series like exponentially longer than the series before it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like parentheses inside parentheses.
Yes. Just like the movie Inception, right? Like you go deeper into the dream and all of a sudden like time slows down in the last place you left.
What is the real podcast anymore?
Yeah. Whoa, meta.
Well, today on this podcast, this is the real podcast you're listening to right now. The top continues to spin and we are talking Jarrah from the land down under. Casey, a fascinating tree, as far as I know, like most plants from Australia. And we have a lot to say about it. After the break, we will be right back with Completely Arbitrary. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we are going down under once again and talking the Jarrah or Jarrah. Scientific name, Casey?
The scientific name is Eucalyptus marginata.
It's a eucalyptus, huh?
It is a eucalyptus. You shouldn't be surprised by now, anyone in the world.
Yeah.
Every time you talk about, it's like the Douglas fir over here. The quintessential thing is you're on the west side of the Cascades and you point at a needleleaf tree. And you just say that's a Douglas fir, like 60% of the time, you're going to be right. Think if you go down to Australia and you point at a tree and you say that's a eucalyptus of some kind, you're probably going to be right.
Well, see, I am glad that we I feel like we've been talking a lot about a lot of Australian trees lately, and I hope that everybody likes it. But I am glad that we don't just, whenever we talk about an Australian tree, it's not always a eucalyptus.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
We've talked about Bulbanksia. We've talked about
Woolamai pine.
Woolamai, that's right.
And then also another eucalyptus. We had the Eucalyptus regnans, I believe.
Right. Well, Casey, today is Jara, and let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are, how about this? We're walking through the aisles of an Australian grocery store, and I go, oh, wow, a Jara. And you say, Alex, that's a box of instant hot chocolate, you fool. And I say, oh, right. Sorry, I got confused because they're called the same thing.
Jara?
Yes, Casey.
What?
Jara is a brand of Australian instant drinks.
Oh my God, I think you told me this when we initially talked about this.
Wow, this is genuine surprise.
Yeah. I was genuinely surprised. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
That's right, yeah. Jara makes like hot chocolate and apple cider and stuff. The little packet that you unzip and you put into hot water and
stir
up.
Yeah, okay, all right. So that blew me away just then. I'm sorry I forgot.
That's okay. Casey, well, of course, I in this hypothetical, I see the box and you say, Alex, you fool. Let's go out back. We go into the back of the grocery store.
Yeah.
And there are some jars growing in the parking lot, maybe.
There you go.
And Casey, let's ID this tree,
mate. Let's do it. All right, mate. So here's how it goes. The Eucalyptus marginata is a big forest tree.
Mm.
It's a tree that I think what we should actually do is not talk about this in terms of where we could be walking today, but rather where we would have been walking 200 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Because that, I think, will give a better example.
Oh, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That might give a little bit of this away.
Yeah.
So the Jara is a big, big forest tree, up to like 130 feet tall sometimes.
Oh, wow.
And it usually gets like upwards of 6 feet in diameter. Like, it's one of those eucalyptus where whenever you see one, you're like, that is a tree.
Yeah.
It's not a kind of small, wispy one. Some of other species grow down in California and they get massive. This is one of those big, massive, massive trees.
Okay.
Now, it grows generally, I think one of the biggest ones in diameter is like 11, 12 feet. Like, they can get pretty like comparatively large to what a Douglas fir, a big conifer over here, mm-hmm. would get. They don't get quite as tall, of course, and they, you know, kind of fall apart because they have a different form and habit. They are unlike a Douglas fir or another conifer with that straight stem, the branches that come out.
I know this one.
Yeah, is it?
They have kind of a Y shape to them.
Yeah, they open up at the top. You know, we call that a decurrent canopy as opposed to an X-current canopy.
So the main stem kind of turns into two slightly more minor stems.
Yeah, but only way up. This is still a single stem tree. So it still grows single stem, but then once it gets to the like kind of the forest height, it starts to top out near that 100, 130, 20 feet in, mm-hmm. there. Then the branches start to kind of catch up and the middle branch or the middle main stem grows just a little bit slower and the branches on the side kind of start to catch up, you know?
I gotcha.
So that's how it develops this kind of flatter top, so to speak.
Does it still have limbs growing on the sides all the way down?
It does, but this is a forest tree that grows in a drier habitat, a very unique kind of dry habitat over in Western Australia.
Mm.
They call it the Darling Plateau.
Oh,
which
yes.
I just love. Like, it just makes me so happy.
This is where the Banksia grew, no?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. But the Banksia kind of also grows a little bit further down a little bit. Banksia's habitat is a little bit larger, whereas the Jara grows at higher elevations where there's enough water and kind of down on the coastal plain area where you get a little bit more water kind of overall, but in general it's a dry habitat area.
Okay.
But same exact kind of range.
They're neighbors. This is like, you're Australian. I know an Australian. Are you guys neighbors?
Yeah.
You know?
I was like, no.
Do you know John?
In this case, they're like, I do know John. Yeah, John's my next door neighbor. How did you guess? You know, I that happens to me, Alex, all the time. Someone does that. Like, oh, what do you UMass? Do you know this person? And never once has that actually ever happened?
Of course.
But I still do it. And there's a part in my brain that I feel like it did happen once, but I also think I'm making that up.
Oh, you just want it so bad.
I just want it so bad.
That would be a fun moment, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know Jessica? Jessica James? Yeah, I do. Yeah, oh my God. Alex, this tree, though it does get big, it also stays small. And it grows in a really curious way because it has what's called a lignotuber.
Wow.
Yeah. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. What is it?
It's a big swelling growth at the base of a tree, kind of where the main stem above ground hits the ground and transitions to roots. It has this giant kind of bulbous kind of just swelling at the base.
Wow.
And the purpose of that is that if fire comes through and kills I was writing this down and I laughed to myself. When the fire comes through, because this is a drier habitat and fires were set by the indigenous aboriginals of Australia since time immemorial. So fires and the people and the trees and the plants have all developed together, very much similar to the United States and North America at large. So this tree grew and developed this really interesting tuber.
I see.
So fire comes through, kills what we think is the tree. The tree is just the above ground portion, and it regrows again from this big tuber.
Wow.
And sometimes they develop this this form called pronunciation is Mali or Mali. And it's spelled Mallee. And it's essentially a shrubby form where there's a bunch of stems that all pop up from a tree.
Okay.
And a lot of different eucalypts have this same kind of growth, but they don't get more than like 10 feet tall. Hmm. They just have like this kind of like, oh, well, we're just going to go, meow, and just pop up and become shrubs.
Yeah. I'm sort of imagining like bamboo growth.
Yeah, a little bit.
Or it's just kind of like...
Yeah, and then like from an underground kind of tube, kind of like a root coming up, it regrows, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, but not quite as robust. Like bamboo, there's like thousands of them, right? Like
right.
It's a grass in all intents and purposes.
Right.
This as a tree, it kind of grows more like a hazel maybe, or another thing that's like a shrub tree, not tree shrub.
Hawthorny kind of?
Yeah, a little bit like that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But the big specialty is that lignotuber.
Got it. Interesting. What a fun little characteristic.
Isn't it? Like, I never really thought about it.
Yeah.
Several trees around our area have it too. Like, redwoods kind of do this.
Okay.
But not so specifically.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of like will develop one because that's kind of how it does it every now and then.
Yeah.
Sometimes burls develop at the base of a tree, you know, it's like the same thing aspens kind of do, but there are certain trees that develop it explicitly as a part of their habit all the time. Others, they just kind of happens and develops, and now the tree's just doing that thing.
Interesting. I don't know why I know this or why I think this, but it does seem very Australian to me, like from a botany perspective,
it
you
is.
Know? Like,
yeah,
it's
totally.
So specific and weird.
Yeah.
And so many of these plants have something like that.
I think, I mean, for those of you who are in Australia listening to this, in the United States at least, it's a colloquialism to say everything on Australia is trying to kill you.
Right.
So I think that makes sense because Australia is just this such a strange, strange place in terms of how the ecosystem has developed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not strange is not the right word. I take that back. Scratch from the record. Alex?
Can I suggest a different word?
Yes.
It's so specific.
And unique. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Like, it's just, it's had the time. I agree with you. It's a quintessential Australian oddity that's so purely delightful.
Well, Casey, let's talk bark.
Yeah. So another fun term. Honestly, I had so much fun learning about this tree.
Wow.
It has a type of bark that is both a type and a description. It's called stringy bark.
Stringy bark.
Yeah. And it's not like saying, oh, your bark is stringy. It's you have the attribute that is stringy bark.
Okay. Yeah. How is this defined?
A kind of eucalyptus species. It's very specific, and it has bark that's very fibrous, but like will rip off in huge, big kind of fibrous slabs. Like it's a strange idea that I've never really run across. We don't have trees that really have this. Like maybe a redwood would be the best example.
Right. I was thinking like Western red cedar, but not really.
Yeah, but this is like even more because it's like the stringiness to them, like I think you can almost grab them and like just go and just kind of pull them off.
I'm imagining string cheese, Case.
Yeah, string cheese, but like, oh, I'm looking at a picture and like it's also kind of a fire adaptation because as the fire comes through and it burns the outside, the string kind of like pops back and like kind of you know, you ever burn like a very thin piece of wood and it kind of curls?
Yeah,
this does it's a similar kind of process.
Okay,
so it kind of just burns everything away and doesn't really affect it too much. Of course, again, this is a fire adapted tree, so it's kind of like string cheese, but like burnt ass string cheese.
Fucking melted.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
Well, that sounds interesting, Case.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those fun things, right?
That's two for two.
Alex, are you okay? Oh, while he was pulling up his fingers to say two, he whipped his finger on the the mic stand.
Yeah.
You could hear it from here.
Right on my fingernail.
I hope you're okay.
I'm okay.
So this tree, Alex, they describe as a stringy bark, which is fun.
Oh, you get it now? I see.
Yeah. So this is
a stringy bark.
According to the Wikipedia, because you know what? I could not find a very good, like, easily read description of this tree, like the botanic sense of it.
Okay.
So I'm sure there are, but many of them were just not very, they just didn't look very good.
And sure.
It wasn't very clear. So this is probably one of the only times that Wikipedia has been the best at describing this tree.
Sweet.
And so it is they describe it as a stringy bark with rough grayish brown vertically grooved fibrous bark that sheds in long strips.
Okay.
So it's a pretty cool tree.
Casey, let's talk leaves.
Leaves are the standard beautiful eucalyptus leaf.
Lanceolate.
Yep. Has a big middle vein that's very, like, you know, pronounced.
Yeah.
And the scientific name marginata is because it has two veins that run right along the margin
of it
on the outside. It's a little bit curved, kind of darker green on top, lighter green below.
Mm-hmm.
And like just your very quintessential kind of sickle-shaped leaf that's pointed at the tip.
So if veins are for transportation of fluids.
Yeah.
I just winked at Casey.
Yeah, I did. I'm like, why? Why did he wink at me?
Just the word transportation of fluids.
Oh, that's visceral. Alex, like, I just want to say this. Yes, a vein is for transportations of fluid.
Why,
Alex?
Casey winked at me. Why would they being the Jarrah trees, evolutionary masters, put veins on the outside as opposed to like veins? Does it also have veins that kind of come out from the middle
there
vein?
There are lateral veins that kind of go between them.
So they just like, put in like an expressway on the outside.
Yeah, exactly. There's like the road that goes right down the middle, then there's the belt line kind of thing.
Yes,
right. Exactly. That's what I think the best way to describe it.
Interesting.
And then, of course, the best part about this tree for a lot of things, especially bees and the people because they have the honey afterwards, is the flower. It blooms every 2 years.
Oh, wow.
That was very surprising to me. I've never seen this in like such a, they said, one, two.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So they have like very fragrant, described as starburst flowers and they just pop open and they have almost a spherical fruit at the end. That's kind of a little bit of a kind of a black capsule looking thing.
Okay. Any deliciousness found in that?
I don't think so. It just has seeds. They fall and then the tree grows.
Utility fruit.
Yeah. Utility fruit, but the flowers, the bark, the form, it's all stunning.
Okay.
Now the real thing, Alex, is all below this. The thing that really, makes it, it really tells you who this tree is, according to at least most of the people who came with saws, who are British. It's what's underneath that counts. And that's
interesting.
The wood, Alex.
Oh, I was like, the roots?
Oh, God.
You're talking...
like metaphysically?
Laterally underneath.
Yes, literally quite underneath. The bark and the flowers and the form and all that.
Okay, yes, Casey.
It's the wood.
The wood. Well, what can you tell us about this wood?
Oh, so I'm taking a lot from a bunch of different things, but one of the things, the book that really made me be like, oh, I got to look further into this. It's called Around the World in 80 Trees. And either my mom or my sister got this for me. A couple years ago for Christmas.
Hmm.
I can't remember who, because they both gave me a bunch of books, but I can't remember which came from what.
I gotcha.
So they both get credit.
Shout out to mom and sis.
Yeah, love you guys. It's by Jonathan Drory and illustrations by Lucille Clerk, and we'll post it on the website. But they have such a delightful discussion where they go from, they start in England where they're from, and they go around the world and they discuss 80 different trees across all the continents and kind
wow.
of some really interesting story. Like, it's kind of like the podcast for books. Like, it's really good.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So if I could, I would be like, will you guys come be producers on this show and do all the work for me? That'd be great. So this is their Western Australia entry. And okay. they describe the wood as like this really intense, dark red kind of color. And it's just hard as a rock.
Wow. I mean... Do we have a Jenka for the Jera on the books?
We don't have the Jenka, actually. I should have looked that up, but I didn't. I looked up the average dried weight.
Well, Casey, I'm going to look up the Jenka while you talk about the average dried weight.
I'll give you a little bit of that. The average dried weight for the Jera is 52 pounds per cubic foot.
So if I have a 12 by 12 by 12 inch cube of Jera wood.
Yes.
It weighs 52 pounds?
Yes, while dried to, I think, 12% moisture.
And dry should be lighter than fresh.
Fresh, it's double that.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Now, for some comparison, who knows? Like, it's just, it's decay resistant,
wow.
it's water resistant, wind resistant, insect resistant, like termites don't get into it. It's this tree that has this wood that is like just almost impossible to destroy.
That's amazing. So why are loggers so into it?
Well, isn't that the thing? Just real quick before we move too far, I want to make sure that this is in some kind of context. Western red cedar, a tree that's also extremely decay resistant and very, it's not tough. It's not a very dense wood.
Mm-hmm.
It is at 23 pounds. And the
wow.
Douglas fir is at 32 pounds per cubic foot.
Okay. So it's not like astronomical, but it is very heavy.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah. then the red oak is 45. Lignum vitae is 78.5. So there's a huge range.
Wow.
But it's definitely on the harder, heavier side of this.
That's wild.
Did you find a Jenka hardness?
Casey, the Jenka hardness for the Jera Jenka is 1,860 pound force.
Wow. Like, I think I know that 1,000 is very high. Cause like
yeah.
some of the things we looked at, I think like the Linden was like 45 or something like that.
Oh geez.
So like, I think that's off the charts.
This is a heavy, hard wood.
And the reason I know that is like definitely for sure and off the charts
mm-hmm.
is because the reason, like you asked, that loggers were interested in it is because they were selling these trees not only for use in places like harbors and like to, you know, do pilings in water because it just would never decay.
Sure.
Or to build boats with because, again, it would never decay.
Yeah.
Really strong wood. They would use it for houses and building material and like you name it for like the normal kind of like, oh yeah, that's what you use wood for. They would also fetch a very fine price for it in European cities to literally pave roads with.
Wow.
Alex, can you imagine a road in a modern city paved with only wood?
It'd be kind of pretty.
It would. It would be gorgeous, right? You can wow. imagine.
Yeah.
Apparently, they used to do this in like swanky places like London and Berlin, Moscow. Like mm-hmm. they had, according to the book, I think something like 20 to 30 kilometers in London of the nicest, fanciest roads before kind of macadam was there, before you could actually pave it with, you know, asphalt. They would put concrete underneath and then put wood on top. And then sometimes they would put asphalt over the top again
oh.
just to like make a good base layer.
Oh,
I don't really know why.
To cover up the wood grain.
I guess so. They weren't looking at the wood grain to be like pretty. The wood grain was just a really hard way to pave a road
uh-huh.
that was better than their alternative, which was either a softer, more porous wood, which I learned from this book, which I just am so tickled about. Everywhere used horses back then.
Yeah.
So the horses would just pee on the street. And then apparently if you use like a certain kind of wood, that would get absorbed into it. So your whole road would just smell like urine.
Oh Lord.
And then if you had like a big heavy cart roll over it, it would actually squeeze and compress the wood and shoot urine off onto people.
Oh my God.
Could you imagine that?
This is a terrible idea.
Yeah, and it's in their swankiest things. Imagine down like, you know, Fifth Avenue or whatever. Think of the fanciest, nicest street neighborhood shopping place in your area.
Yeah.
And to make it really gussied up, you pave it with wood that then just smells like nothing but urine that squirts at you every time a horse goes by with a keg of beer on it.
God, that's terrible.
Isn't that just like, could you imagine that, Alex?
That's
like
so wildly short-sighted too. And we've talked about some really short-sighted solutions on this podcast.
So this was the answer to that short-sightedness.
Mm.
They would also pave with like cobblestones and things, but that was really hard on like the hooves of the animals, and it didn't absorb anything. So like it would always run off. Like there were problems with it. It's also very slick, you know?
Yeah.
So
this is pre-asphalt.
Yes, this is pre-asphalt.
By quite a ways.
Yeah, this is like in the 1850s kind of thing. Yeah. This is basically the next level up from dirt. So our tree, is growing in a dry habitat.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it growing in a dry habitat, but that dry habitat is really unique and beautiful because, again, Australia is just a unique and beautiful place.
Yeah.
But because of this dry habitat where these huge trees would grow, and they would live for easily 400 years, up to 600 sometimes.
Wow.
And they were the keystone of this entire habitat, where they would get really large and have enough space that animals would live inside of them. And they were this really intense habitat. They are also very integral for the culture of the Nyungar people that live there, because they live within these forests. And the thing about these forests is, Alex, have you ever like really dove into marsupials?
You know what? I haven't, but I could easily see myself doing so. Are wild.
Do yourself that favor.
Okay.
Sometime.
Okay.
It's a delight.
Well, what have you found marsupial style about the Jera?
They have the cutest names. They have names like the Numbat and Poturu, Kwol, Quenda.
These are animals that live in Jara?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And or they live in Jara forests, more particularly. And I could name a bunch. Again, those are from this book, World in Around the World in 80 Trees.
Yeah.
And they're a unique kind of mammal. Again, they developed on Australia in such a unique situation. And they kind of filled in all the niches that other mammals across the world filled in their respective habitats.
Mm.
But they're also just like adorable little like mousy looking things sometimes.
Yeah.
Like little wombats. Like they're just... they're just super cute.
Koalas are very, very cutesy little, little guys.
So this is like filled with this, you know, special habitat, right? With these special animals and, you know, people that have lived there for, you know, 50,000 plus years. And then people show up from around the world and they find this tree that's growing here that has this amazing quality. This amazing quality is sought after.
Okay.
And they started exporting it to all these European cities.
It's just a bad sign, you know?
Like it is, right?
Anytime we talk about something in nature being like, it grabs the attention of humans, it's like, well, that it's gone now.
Gone now. You have no idea what to do. So they started cutting this, and this is where logging kind of takes a bit of a departure. So in the Pacific Northwest, if you industrially log something, we have so much rain that our habitats will often, at least certainly on the west side, if you give it time, it will rebound and it will turn on again.
Yeah.
And you'll have big trees. You know, you have to give it 800 years maybe to have the complexity that it had before, but it'll get there and it won't be you give it 100 years, you'll get big trees again and everything kind of looks like it's back to normal or at least well on its way.
Yeah.
In this habitat, you had a bunch of things that were going a little bit wrong. If you destroyed the lignotuber, then the plant just wouldn't respond.
Mm.
So in way back when, they would cut this tree because it was worth so much money. But because there were all these kind of competitors, the prices were lowered. So they would cut the trees and sell them at a lower and lower price. So the economics drove, again, like our last discussion, they drove this forestry. And that just ended up destroying the habitat. Not to mention, if you do cut the tree, then it's as if there's a fire or some big damage to the top, so it sprouts up in these lignotuber kind of mollies, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you don't get this, you know, other big gigantic grand tree. Maybe in time it will develop and you'll get that, you know, one single stem will take dominance and then you'll have this, you know, new tree that comes around.
But you maybe for the most part just get a bunch of shrubland now.
Yeah, exactly. And so you start to affect the soil as well. The roots, I should have noted, Alex. Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
These roots go down almost 100 feet.
What?
Yes. This is their dry habitat kind of response.
Right.
This is another desert kind of plant thing.
Well, Casey's saying because the soil and that is so dry, usually... I won't say usually. When I say usually, I mean a Pacific Northwest tree because that's where I live here. And I have great pride. Like a Douglas fir root system doesn't go down more than 2 or 3 feet, but it goes out a really long way. It doesn't need to go down because it has all the water it needs.
Precisely.
Basically at the surface. This Jarrah growing in the dry...
Darling range.
This darling little mountain range. It's very dry up there, so it has to just keep pushing and pushing and pushing down and down and down and down and down until it finds water.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Isn't it incredible?
100 feet.
Exactly.
I've never heard of something like that.
Neither have I. And I know a lot of people talk about this. Like Oregon white oak has another thing down in, I think, southern Oregon where they found roots growing in a cavern that came from a Oregon white oak growing, you know, 80 feet above.
Oh my God.
So it's like, well, it's funny. Just following this little trickle of water down, you know, between the cracks and the rocks.
Incredible.
So in this case, I don't know what all the rest of the geology is, except for it has something called bauxite or bauxite.
Bauxite.
Yes. So this is the other part of this, is that the logging came through to initially take this high value tree and they cut almost all of it, like a stunning amount. But because they cut it and it's such a kind of a slow moving and a slow to respond habitat, the more that you kind of throw it off and out of balance, the more likely it is to never come back and never respond. So it's like if you go down to the deserts of the Southwest and you cut a bunch of cactus that are huge, great, they might come back over time, but you have to give it hundreds of years. Like it takes one of those saguaros to get up to the point where it puts out one limb, it's like 80 years or something.
Wow.
Like it's a crazy amount of time. So when you see a big one, you have to be like, oh, a big one is like an old one.
Yeah.
So the same thing happens in this forest.
Okay.
So if you take the industrial kind of ideas of the Pacific Northwest, where there's plenty of water in most of these places, the trees come back pretty quickly and the forest rehabs itself pretty quick. You go over down to a place where it doesn't have that resilience, then all of a sudden when a disturbance comes through, you're like, oh my gosh, this is not coming back.
Yeah.
That's kind of where it's at with the Jarrah. However, Alex, the minerals that are beneath the Jarrah are even more valuable today than the tree's wood is.
Okay, what minerals are we talking?
Well, bauxite or bauxite. It's B-A-U-X-I-T-E.
Okay, B-A-U.
Yeah, so it could be bauxite, bauxite.
Bauxite?
I don't know.
Bauxite?
I don't even want to give it the time of day. It's tin is what it is.
Oh, it's just tin.
It is filled with tin, rather... aluminum and gallium are the things that usually has.
This is like bauxite takes off his mask and everybody's like, tin.
Oh, tin, get out of here.
It's just tin.
Yeah, so I guess I shouldn't say this because we're talking about an actual element, and tin is a different element than aluminum.
Okay.
But a tin can and an aluminum can is like the same thing.
Synonymous, yeah.
Yeah, fully. So this is technically aluminum and gallium. If you're in Australia or England, aluminium. Sorry, right. Just in case you guys, I know that's lost in translation.
Okay, so what about this bauxite?
They're mining it like crazy.
Oh, jeez.
And Alcoa and another company down there have a lot of mining rights. And the government, way back when, they put in some practices to kind of say, whoa, we need to make this more sustainable and be able to regrow these trees. And there's certain places where they have developed more of a plantation style.
Okay.
But the government has not continued to really protect these trees in this area because mining interests have been like, we're going to clear this, clear the forest, because we want to take the minerals that are underneath the forest.
I see.
They've lost so much that I'm not even sure that you can go find like really like in the Pacific Northwest, we did the same thing. We cut so many of our trees in the Midwest and the East. We've cut so many of the Eastern white pines.
Right. Go listen to last week's episode for more on that travesty.
But they're growing back, and you can still find some places where there's like acres and acres, hectares and hectares, like a lot of land with these big ancient trees still protected in national parks and places.
Same principle, same logging principles applied to these Jarrah forests.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to grow back.
And they either haven't, or they've been cut and either replaced with another fun tree called the Monterey pine.
Oh yeah, I know Monterey pine.
Yeah, a lot of people do. It's an invasive forest tree. And that is, not to give too much away, our next conversation.
Wow.
But that is the what they've done is they basically cut down all and take all the value off the land, mine it sometimes, but if they don't mine it, then often it gets planted back with this other forest commodity tree that is used for timber growing, but in a very much plantation style.
Okay.
So the forest is completely gone and changed. So all these adorable animals in this area, which is filled, like they call it a biodiversity hotspot. And Alex, I swear to God, I am finding that biodiversity hotspots are everywhere. Hmm. Like all we're doing is looking harder, and we find like that every ecosystem is unique and filled with life, even though it looks like it's not on the surface.
Sure. You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is another example where you can find it everywhere, especially in dry places where everything's so particularly developed.
Yeah.
This is that same kind of thing. So I'm not sure that you can go find a gigantic, huge area of Jarrah forest.
Really?
Like you can find a few groves, you can find a few places where it's been growing back, but not really. I don't think, I have not found anything. And someone please tell us where someone can find it, because we'll post it and say, go find these Jarrahs. They're gorgeous.
Yeah.
But wow. Yeah, there's very few. There's one called the Looming Relic, which is really such
I know of this tree.
You do?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Well, I did a little, you know.
Oh, look at you, Alex.
Did a little Googling.
What do you think of it?
I think that it is, you know, we have these redwoods that are named down in the redwood forests. General Sherman. Or is that a
giant sequoia? Okay, yeah. But there's a
Here's me making the same. I always do this.
Hyperion.
Anyway. Sure. Which is a fine name. It's pretty cool. It's very militaristic.
Yeah, okay.
Hyperion. It's the name of the ship from StarCraft.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah,
oh,
Hyperion is like a battle cruiser.
Oh, shoot. I had no idea.
Yeah. But the Looming Relic, though, is far more D&D.
Yeah.
And I'm big time on board with the Looming Relic.
Oh, my God. It's the Looming Relic. Watch out.
It's what you find at the very end of your adventure. Oh, my God. We found the It's what the adventure's named after. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Indiana Jones and the Looming Relic.
Oh, dude. Now we're talking. That's so good.
I'll give you that one for free, Spielberg.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Take it.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is just a very big old Jarrah.
Yeah.
Jarrah, who that hasn't been, thank God, hasn't been fucked up.
Yeah, and there's a few others. Like, I read about a place called Lane Pool Reserve that has some, and there are some. I've heard about, you know, spectacular places out there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is a tree that logging came through, and I admit this was at a different time, you know, in a different level of how we understood things.
Sure.
But my God, capitalism has not changed that much.
Yeah.
So I cannot imagine, unless we had something like, I don't know, if we stumbled upon some island that we had no idea about that had this wildly incredible tree,
mm-hmm.
I bet you today we would be able to protect it, because science would be like, no, we must study this. We want to know everything about it. But like, capitalism would still be like, well, we can cut some of those, right? Scientifically speaking, let's cut down 3,000 of these trees and see what they're all about.
Right. And so, I mean, I think the only difference between then and now is now that there are like more loopholes you have to go through to cut them all.
Yeah, right. It's
back then it was just like, let's cut them.
Let's just do it. Yeah, just move in and take it. Yeah. Who cares about the people and the animals and the things that have been there for, you know, so long that it doesn't even matter to say, like, so long that they are the same thing.
Yeah.
Their cultures are one, and the culture of the jar is the culture of the people, is the culture of the animals and all the other plants that are there.
And the lives of all these things are the same, essentially, too.
Everything is connected, and then something comes through that is the industrial practice of logging, but back then, same thing. And you're just like, wow, like the response of the same kind of idea over a different playing field.
Yeah.
It's just so vastly different.
Yeah. It's pretty tragic. I mean, I like we said, if we knew more then, it might've been different.
Yeah.
But to cut all that down and then realize probably much later that, these trees were like so specified to their environment that now it's like, well, you're going to have to give us 800 years to catch back up.
Yeah.
It's pretty sad, Casey.
It is. It's pretty sad. This unfortunately, I mean, we're talking about logging. I'm sorry to say there's probably not a lot of, really happy stories here.
Yeah.
But this is probably, this is one of the rough ones that I remember reading about. And I was reading through this book and I was like, well, that sounds like a fascinating tree. And then, you know, of course you dig deeper and, you hear a lot. And there's a couple of resources that I've put on our website.
Oh, yeah.
That have talked about the biodiversity of this area and kind of what the government is doing, because I don't want to disparage the Australian government. They are making steps, very good steps, but the mining interest is really, really taking a toll, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So that's a local issue that, you know, everyone needs to really work on. But a report came out. It's called 1,000 Cuts in 2020, and they've still been losing like a wild amount of forest between 2010 and 2020. Like the rate is still accelerating of deforestation.
Yeah,
even in the last 10 years
in Australia.
Yeah,
yeah.
Of this specific kind of area. So,
oh my gosh,
there's strides to be made, but man, if you're down there in Australia, definitely keep the pressure on.
Yeah,
because these trees, though I'm sure there's plenty that are growing around that are, you know, 100 years old, 80, 60. It sounds like this ecosystem is like on the verge of literally collapsing or transitioning to a completely different ecosystem, which is wild to think of.
And then being so fragile. And I don't know if I want to say fragile. What's the word I'm looking for? Maybe like so specialized.
Yeah.
It's like kind of like, ooh, it gives me a little anxiety to think about them cutting all of them down, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Because they're effectively not coming back.
Effectively, yeah. Not certainly in our lifetimes, the lifetimes of our children or their children.
Right.
Collectively, maybe if we stop now.
Well, let's do it, Casey.
Let's stop now.
We got to send this episode to the Australian government and see if we have any pull.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Please. If anyone knows the Prime Minister of Australia, connect us on Instagram or something.
Or if anybody knows like their name or anything, I'll start there because I'm not sure. Well, Casey, that was our discussion of the Jarrah. Another tragic tale, but logging and these things often are. But the Jarrah story is not over. No, no, no. It deserves a Golden Cone score, and we will give it that after the break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today, we talked Jarrah, and now we will give it a cone review. Here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this beautiful tree. I don't want to load my review, but
I
don't think that's that inflammatory.
I don't think so. No one's gonna, I don't think anyone's gonna fly off the rails being like, whoa, Alex,
what is that called in a court when you leading the witness? Leading the review a little bit by calling it a beautiful tree.
Objection. You can't tell me what you're gonna say before you say it. Judge, you're just gonna let this happen?
Overruled.
Jesus, what is this, a kangaroo court?
Oh, it is. Oh, my God.
Damn it. The judge is a literal kangaroo.
That's how they do things down on her case. I'm going to give some final thoughts on this tree, then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey, as our resident expert, we will begin with you.
It's very sweet. Okay, so this is an interesting tree for me. Like, I think I feel a similar way that you do, like, in terms of my heart. I almost have, like, a tragic love for this tree.
Totally.
Though I've never seen one in real life. And, of course, I want to. I'm constantly angling about how I can get you to decide that we should pay for a trip to Australia.
I would love this.
Oh, I didn't even know I had to convince you less than that?
You just had to bring it up.
Damn it. So, yeah, I don't know. So this is, like, it's such a unique tree. And I have to say, I'm sorry, everyone down there. There are so many eucalyptus trees that I'm just like, ugh, another eucalypt. Okay, I get it. Yeah, you guys got 1,000. I see. I do the same thing sometimes with, like, eastern broadleaf forests. Like, oh, it's another oak tree. Cool, whatever. It's just another oak tree. But there are some that are uniquely, like, outstanding for some reason. Now, I'm not saying that this is one of those trees. I'm just saying they exist.
Well, now is your time to say it if you feel that way.
So I kind of feel like this is one of those outstanding trees.
Yeah.
The tree itself in the wood is, like, beyond stunning. Like, it's this dark kind of reddish maroon color. Like, it just looks like something that's out of this world. Like, you know, you think it's like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool, but then you're kind of like, oh my God, that's, like, really cool. Like, I want to see that in something. And I also just dig the whole entire keystone-ness of this tree.
For sure.
I think it's a really interesting tree, although the interesting thing is it's not a keystone that I can tell because of, like, its interactions necessarily, other than, like, it just has created the conditions of this forest system that then creates the conditions for all this other stuff to go on.
I see. It's like the backbone of the forest.
Yes.
Not like an integral living, like, member of the community.
It's a weird distinction we're trying to make.
I don't even think I did a fair job of it. In fact, I think I'll probably edit that out. No, you know what? I'll leave it in to show how difficult it is.
All right. Yeah. So I guess all this to say is that I think this tree is, like, beyond interesting, but in kind of a unique way. Okay. So if I'm just going to say, like, plant it or don't plant it, like, overplanted, this is underplanted. There should be a lot more of these. And I believe you can buy them and just plant them wherever. I'm sure someone is going to be like, oh, trust me, this tree's everywhere.
Yeah.
Just not in the old fashioned way. Like, Douglas fir, dime a dozen, but the big ones are like, what?
That's funny. Calling a forest tree the old fashioned way.
Yeah.
As opposed to city trees.
Yeah, exactly. The newfangled. So I'd say, For an old-fashioned and a newfangled tree, I want to give this an 8.1.
Fantastic, like, score.
Straight up an amazing tree. Is it the tallest tree in the world? No. But it should be planted more. It should not be cut down. I think if it's over 2 feet in diameter, leave it alone from now on. And just work really hard to redevelop this and kind of, I don't know, right the wrongs of history with not only the culture of the people that used to be there, that, you know, a lot of the way that works in our modern age is somewhat like, well, that ship has sailed. We just have to figure out how to move on from here. Yeah. But I think that there is a lot of work that we can do to repair these things. So that's what I really want to see, because it's not only the people, it's not only the trees, it's the animals and everything that we can't just go in and destroy an ecosystem and then say, oh, sorry, we didn't know. We can't do that anymore.
Totally, Casey.
Yes, yeah, so that's where I'm at.
Very good, Case. 8.1 golden Banksia cones of honor.
That's right. Oh, wow.
I'm just saying.
You just threw that out there.
Just, like, a proposal.
You hit me right in the face.
Just a proposal.
All right, Alex, what about you? As a purveyor of beauty.
Oh, wow.
What do you think?
Well, you're going to hate me, Case.
Uh-oh.
The, quote, beauty of this tree, the wood.
Yeah.
The sort of big standout, you know. We ended our ID section with the wood.
Yeah, that is true.
How often does that happen?
I don't think it's ever happened, actually.
There you go. Mm. I think it's fine.
Oh.
I'm not totally attracted to the wood.
Okay.
It's got this 90s kind of maroon red that I don't love, you know?
Yeah, this is the Maroon 5 inspiration tree.
It's the color that reminds me of, like, early 2000s kitchen floor renovation.
What? I don't know I don't know how to process.
Remember in the early 2000s, everybody's mom was getting their kitchen redone.
Okay.
It was like this big family thing. Like, we're getting our kitchen redone, you know, all new appliances and flooring and cabinets and countertops, right? Marble countertops. I feel like Jara color wood was big.
All right. I think I know what you mean. Like, kind of a very rich, woody, dark, but not like too dark.
But
kind
pretty
of,
red,
but
too.
Very red. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I know what you're talking
that's
about.
That's sort of what it triggers in me, which is not great for it.
Yeah, this is like, ooh, oh, Jara, we're really sorry, but you remind us of your Home Depot remodels from the mid-2000s.
Laminate flooring. You're a little tacky, Jara.
A little tacky. Take yourself seriously, why don't you?
All the rest, though, big fan. Mm. I love eucalypts in general. Mm-hmm. I love the wildlife that relies on them. I love the size of this tree as in terms of a eucalypt. Eucalypts in general are a lot bigger than I imagined.
Yeah.
Everyone I've learned about, it's been like, wow, that's impressive.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. One of these days we just got to cover a Mali.
I think the fact that its root system is so extra is like really fun.
Yeah. Honestly, its roots are taller than most trees are.
This is great.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, I have a fondness for Australian trees, Case. Mm. I think they're really special and unique, like a lot of Australian wildlife. I would say like most Australian wildlife. What the fuck is a kangaroo, huh? That thing is weird.
Yeah, it's very out there.
Yes. So, I'm gonna land, I gotta do it. I'm gonna say 8.7.
8.7
golden cones of honor for the Jara. Yeah.
Honestly, when you started that, I was convinced you were gonna go just straight down the toilet.
Well, that would mean a 10 in Australia because they go the other way.
Oh wow! Oh my god!
All right, that's enough.
I thought that you were gonna get in and say like, the color's not that great. Yeah, sob story. Yeah, we're sorry. Yeah, 6.2.
Sure. No, I'm going the other way.
All right. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, 8.7 golden cones of honor for the Jara.
There you are.
I think every time we say it, we change our pronunciation.
I think so. Yeah,
that's just gonna have to be how it is.
Yeah. We don't, it's a matter of course here at Completely Arbitrary Studios. We, under no circumstances, ask, how do you pronounce this?
Yeah, it's not really a part of our research.
It's not really a thing we do, so, yeah.
Well, Casey, speaking of things we do, that was our review of the Jara. Another thing we do is a game. And this one is brand new just for this episode. Exciting new game just for this episode.
Wow.
This one's called The Slang Game.
The Slang Gang?
The Slang Game.
Oh, the Slang Gang.
The Slang Game.
Slang Game.
Casey, here's how it works. I've got a list of Australian slang words.
What? Where did you find these?
Google.
Oh, okay. All right.
From like the University of Victoria or something.
Oh, okay. I thought for a second it makes me think of like Urban Dictionary, and I'm what are these slang terms, Alex?
Australian specific sex positions.
Let me loosen my tie here, because everyone should know whenever we record, we're in suit and tie.
We've got a list of 5 Australian slang words, Casey. I'm going to read you the word.
Okay.
Without knowing what it means, we are going to postulate what this slang might be slang for if it was a scientific term.
Oh, okay. For like a tree thing, you mean? Or for just a scientific tree term, period.
Like, let's, because of the material, let's do tree stuff.
Interesting choice. Okay.
So like, what would this word be in the tree world?
All right.
After which, I will tell you what it actually means.
All right, let's do this, Alex.
All right, Casey, our first slang is Arvo.
Arvo.
A-R-V-O.
Okay, so that's just a kind of fruit. That's pretty simple. Yeah.
Oh, like a droop, a poem, an Arvo.
Exactly, and it's specifically one that is a V shape when it dries. There's a film at the bottom.
Oh my god!
And that film, as soon as it dries, you know, it's a dehiscent fruit.
Uh-huh.
No, it's just a dry fruit. It's not dehiscent. It stays together. But as soon as it dries, that film on the bottom, I'm showing you upside down.
Yes.
It cracks You know, just as it gets very dry and then it goes
brittle. Okay.
Yeah. And then it cracks open and that's when all the seeds come out.
See, that was way too specific not to be a real thing.
It's certainly an arvo.
I think an arvo is a type of arborist saw.
Oh,
like, oh, we can't use a chainsaw. Can you go grab the arvo from the truck?
I feel like that makes it must be short for something.
Right. Like maybe it's the name brand.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Or an arborescent.
Yeah, exactly. Saw. Why is the V in there? No one knows. Yeah.
Ooh. Arvo. Yeah. But I love that. Your fruit thing is great, Casey.
Thank you. Thank you, Alex.
And you came up with this so quick. It was very natural.
You're like, wait a second. Does he know what this is? What's the slang term again? Oh, my God.
Well, Casey, arvo means afternoon.
Oh, seriously?
What are you doing this arvo?
Oh, my God. That's really?
Although, arvo. I mean, I guess in an Australian accent, yeah, it might be more like arvo, like the R is a little softer.
Oh,
like,
I see.
Like a Boston R.
Gotcha.
You know?
For arvo.
Yeah. Arvo. Casey, here's another great one.
All right.
Bludger.
Bludger. Bludger is the slang term.
Yes. I think a bludger would be kind of like a burl. But that is filled with water.
Ooh.
So this tree is covered. The tree's base is covered in bludgers.
I see, yeah.
They are sort of like camel's humps.
Oh, I see, okay.
They're like water reserves.
They fill with water, and then do they get bigger and smaller as they use the water?
I think it's too woody to get bigger and smaller, but the level of water in that, and it's kind of when you cut into it, it's sort of like a fibrous mash.
Mm,
so it's not like a tub of water.
Yeah,
you know, like a water balloon.
Like maybe baobabs, where like it's very, there's like very spongy.
Yeah, or like a cactus,
yeah,
you know?
Gotcha.
Which I think is how that works.
Kind of, yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So I think it would just be like a big water, like a camel hump, a bludger.
Yeah. Oh, there's a bunch of bludgers down there.
But that's even bludger is slang for this thing. You know?
I see. Yeah. I like the idea for a bludger. What I was thinking of, it's like a gall almost. Like it's an insect comes or a disease gets on a leaf. And it's like, oh yeah, this tree has bludgers all over it.
Right.
Like, why do we call it that? It's because it turns the leaf red, so it looks like they're covered in red drops.
Wow.
Blood. Bludger.
That's great, Case.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, I gotta know what this is. I kind of want to guess. I feel like it's like a coffee.
A coffee?
Yeah.
Interesting.
The real slang term.
Oh, give me a bludger.
Yeah, give me bludger.
12-ounce bludger.
Yeah.
It is actually a lazy person.
A lazy person.
Get your ass off the couch, you bludger.
That is so, so good. I love that. I gotta start using some of these terms.
Yeah. I mean, I love Australian slang.
Yeah, okay.
I watch a lot of Kath and Kim, which is an Australian sitcom, and they are very slang heavy. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you gotta translate half of it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I love watching foreign TV and then like Googling what everything they say means.
You're a strange guy, Alex.
A lot of fun. All right, Case.
Yeah, what's our next?
Dag. D-A-G.
D-A-G.
Yes, this can also be used as an adjective, as in daggy.
Oh.
D-A-G-G-Y.
All right. The first thing I think of is just a spike. Like, there's a zag right there.
Like on a, like on an umbrella thorn.
Yeah, yeah, acacia, yeah. Honestly, like, I picture it as on specifically a stem. Like, like you look at a tree and you get a little too close. And you're like, oh, geez, there's a zag on that. Zag, Z-A-G.
Dag. D as in dog.
Oh, my God. Dag. Yes. I still think the same thing.
Okay.
And you're like, oh, there's a bunch of dags on that tree.
Yeah. That tree's daggy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, that's a very daggy tree.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I feel cool, Alex. What do you think?
Dag. Dag, dag, dag. I think dag might be like a fruit. Like almost like how a wasp pollinates and then like gives birth and dies inside a fig.
Yes.
Like a dag might be a fruit that has an insect living and dying in it.
Oh.
Like you could eat these, but they're all dags.
Oh, I get
you. Almost like a dud or like lemon. Like these fruit are dags.
Yeah, you don't want to eat those, but like those are good.
Yeah. If you bite into one, it's like, oh my God, this fruit is daggy.
That's horrifying. Okay. You know? I like that. Okay. Daggy. Yeah. All right.
Well, Casey, dag is, or daggy is an adjective that means kind of like unfashionable or untrendy or kind of tacky looking.
Oh,
like that outfit's really daggy.
Like, oh, that's such a dag.
Like, yeah, I don't know how you would use it
as a noun.
Maybe dag is the adjective.
Oh, okay,
also.
Yes, it's like, oh, that's so dag.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah,
love that.
We'll have to get consultation from our Australian listeners.
But, yes, please send it over.
But that's a word they use a lot in Kath and Kim. Daggy, okay. Bit daggy.
Bit daggy.
Ready for the next one, Case?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Pash. P-A-S-H. Pash.
Pash, to me, seems like a... Okay, what do you think it is?
Let's see. Well, what do you think it is?
Well, let's say it at the same time.
I think it's a powdery thing that comes off of a...
We were saying the same thing, Alex. Why'd you stop?
Pash. I think, I heard what you were saying and I actually quite like it.
Oh, okay.
It's almost like a stomato bloom.
Yeah. Or like it's like something that is like emitted from a tree, like almost like a wound where there's like a, like you can get, it's called bacterial flux, where it kind of goes and kind of sends out this kind of weird like substance that's kind of just generated by bacteria.
Interesting.
Kind of like weeps out of a tree.
Like that liquid is called pash.
Yeah, but I specifically imagine it being more like a dry powder.
Okay.
And being a light whitish kind of gray color.
Wow. And you like get it on your clothes and you don't even realize it. You get home and you're like, oh my God, like, I've got pash all over me.
I'm covered. Yeah. It comes out in the wash.
But let me tell you a little bit of context for this slang in real life.
Yeah.
There's a sub slang, pash rash.
Oh. Okay, yeah.
So I think this also works with yours.
Yeah.
Because this stuff could get on your skin and later you've got hives.
Yeah, pash rash. Oh, God.
I love it, Casey. Can Gross. I go with that too?
Sure. I don't think you should, though.
Okay, I'll think of one. I think pash would be like in autumn, the leaves fall.
Yeah.
And they create kind of like this sludgy, you know, slippery kind of like decaying sludge, right?
Oh, I got you. Yeah.
So I would say that's pash.
Yeah. It's very pash.
The street's covered in pash. Don't go playing. The street's covered in pash.
Yeah. We got to wait till the street cleaners come. Yeah. Yeah. The grass is good though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. I like that.
And then if you slip in that and you get it all over your skin, because it's like decaying matter, like you get kind of like a pash rash.
Gross.
Well, Casey.
Yeah.
This is a fun one.
Okay.
A pash, here, I'll give you another slang, is a snog. Do you know what a snog is?
God, no, I don't.
It's British slang for this for what this is. A makeout session.
Oh, jeez.
You have a snog and you have a pash.
Oh, you have a snog, you have a pash, you get a pash rash, you go to the doctor. Doctor says your pash rash isn't going to go away. You should have checked before you had a nog with this person.
Nog. A nog snog is where you drink a bunch of eggnog and make out with your partner.
It's you baby bird the nog into
Jesus
them,
Christ.
And then you snog afterwards.
Casey, that's incredibly vile. So a pash rash is like, you know, if you make out with somebody with like some stubble,
okay,
you kind of get like red around your...
Gotcha,
you know.
I was imagining like a hickey also.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Gross.
I think it might also be that, Case.
Oh, this is good fun.
We got one more.
Okay, let's do it.
Grouse.
Grouse. It's a kind of bird.
Yes.
Okay.
But this, it also has slang connotations.
Ah, okay.
Grouse. Grouse.
Huh. Okay.
Okay. Well, I my first instinct is that grouse is sort of a general term for like lichen-based epiphytes.
Lichen-based epiphytes.
Like a lot of the trees out there, you're going to find some really beautiful grouse.
Oh, you know? I see.
Or I can also see grouse being a name for a collection of trees in the same way that like a grove.
Copse or something.
Yeah. Like there's a grouse of big leaf maple out there.
Oh, yeah. Just go right over there. That's where the grouse is. Yeah, it's very confusing in North America where grouse is a bird.
So yes.
Go find the grouse in the grouse.
Yeah.
It'd be hard.
The grouse live in the grouse.
Yeah. Duh.
As they do.
As a grouse is wont to live. Oh, shoot. Okay. What would this be for me? I say, so grouse. I'm going to go with an adjective.
Okay.
So one is being grousey.
I see.
So if a tree is being grousey, I think it's growing in a not tree form.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh, it's a very grousey tree. Like it's not being a good tree. It's being kind of a shrubby tree.
Sure.
It's being a bit grousey right now.
Oh, grouse, you know? is like derogatory slang for a tree that's growing like a shrub.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's just a grouse. You're being a little grousy.
Yeah.
Have a snack. You're a little grousy.
Yeah. Here's a Snickers.
Casey, grouse means great or terrific.
It
or
does. Awesome. Oh, yeah. Okay. Nice. So it's exact opposite of what I'd say.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Oh, I want to know how many people are just going to be tickled by that or be like, oh my God, don't ever do that again. You guys made yourself look like idiots.
I'm going to say 50-50.
Yeah. That's what we shoot for.
That's maybe right.
If we can get that up to 70%. We're doing great.
That was the slang game. Thanks slang for game. Joining us on that fun little slang journey. It's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. Casey.
What do we got today? Alex, open that mailbag. We got to get a mailbag jingle.
God, I'd love that. Yeah, we talked about that early on. We just never did it.
Oh, mm-hmm. God. Oh, shit. Yeah, we should do that.
Casey, this week, our question, of course, is from the Patreon. If you have a question for us that you'd like to get on the mainline episode, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. But this one, Casey, is from Caribou.
Hey, Caribou.
Caribou's name is parenthesized in question marks.
Huh. Well,
I don't know what that's about. This might be from Caribou, I guess.
Yeah, it might. Maybe it's not even Caribou.
Maybe it's elk. Casey and Alex.
Maybe it's elk.
I recently was out in Joshua Tree National Park.
Hey, lovely park.
And as I was sauntering about the rocks, I came across a tree that perplexed me.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
It was a conifer and had all the makings of some sort of pine. Hmm. But these needles didn't come in fascicles, Casey. There were single needles all along the branch.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. After some digging, I learned that it was a single leaf pinyon pine. I was wondering if there are other trees out there that go against their most common identifying factors.
Great.
Thank you. Love you both. We love you back, Caribou.
Love you back, Caribou.
Casey, this is a really good question.
It is a really good question.
I was drawn toward it because I'm like, oh yeah, I feel like we run into a lot of trees that you'll say, yeah, all of the trees in this genus have this or this.
Yes.
And then there'll be like an exception to the rule.
It's always an exception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are some other exceptions to the rule when it comes to ID characteristics among genre?
Yeah. Okay. Among genre.
Or family or like, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Casual type, you know, type.
Yeah. I think that's a very good question. It's a very good kind of thing to consider. So this happens kind of all over the place in different things. I could probably not even like scratch the surface of trees that I'm not familiar with because whenever I teach a tree ID course, I always tell people, you're always going to find this on this tree except for one exception. And I never talk about that exception.
Sure.
Because it just, you know, spending any time on the exception ruins your kind of, you know, your ruleness to it.
Interesting, so, Casey.
At least this is how I teach tree ID. But I always make that same note that, like you said, it's like it's always like this, but there's always an exception to the rule. Like nature does not have rules. So there's always going to be an exception. We humans love a rule, though.
Yeah.
Makes everything easy to organize.
For sure.
So in this case, there are lots of plants that do this. I think of oaks and some maples and the pinyon pine. In fact, mm-hmm. most pinyons do this. This is the single leaf pinyon pine, Pinus monophylla.
Okay.
And what's fun about Pinus monophylla is that it has just one needle. But if you look at all the other needles in either the kind of the peri subgroup, which is all the ones that are the pinion, so that's the peri pinion, the Mexican pinion, border pinion, you know, there's a couple different things. Pinus edulis, kind of normal pinion, the big one that we always think of.
The pine nut pinion.
Yeah, exactly. So those all have needles mostly in two, but the peri pine has them in four, which really throws you off.
Because that's even unique among pines.
Exactly.
Because usually we're talking, pines needles come in fascicles or little bundles of two, three, or five.
Precisely.
Which is kind of your broad strokes classification.
Exactly. But then there's the Arizona pine that comes in four as well.
Mm.
And a lot of people are like, well, this is just a ponderosa pine. But then everyone's like, but it like consistently always has four needles.
Right.
That's significantly different. So they're thinking, is this a species? Is it not a species? Of course, because it has a cone, I split it. It's a species for sure, bro.
Oh, you want those
I want those cones, yeah.
You want that cell in your spreadsheet filled
exactly.
in.
You got it. So the pinyons do this, a lot of pines do it, but then like some oaks, like you think of an oak with like those classic like oak lobes on the side. You think of a maple that has that palmately veined leaf.
Right.
But there are some maples that are, they look more like ashes, where they have kind of a long mid rachis with pinnately compound leaves or leaflets coming off. So the box elder is a good example, or the paper bark maple.
So it seems like these little one-off discrepancies can be found in a lot of different places in the tree world.
Yeah, pretty much everywhere.
I'm wondering also, what is it? The rose family flowers have what, five of everything?
Yeah, that's their mode.
I wonder if anything in the rose family has like six.
Yeah, just or four, for some reason. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, we'd have to dive in, but I'm sure that we could find an example.
Yeah.
In identifying or classifying something, the rule is great because it helps you like say, okay, we've made this rule and we can like use that to define everything.
Right.
But then when you see the exception to the rule, it's almost just as easy because it's the exception.
Right.
So you're like, oh, this is that one thing that has that one thing. That's this.
Yeah. You know? And the rule covers, what, 99% of use cases.
Yeah, exactly. But with the pines, I should go back to this. If you take all of their needles and you you kind of hold them at the base where the bundle is, and you like pull them all up together and kind of like they're all kind of flung apart.
That's right.
And you pull them all together and like hold them all like directly laying in a very straight line.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually kind of triangular in cross section. You remember on what game was that?
Board game?
Yes. Trivial Pursuit. You had those little characters and you'd put in those little triangle slices.
Little pieces of pie, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of like what the cross-section what pines look like.
Great
or their leaves.
Visual representation.
Yeah, so you put all those little cross-sections together and boom, you got yourself a full circle.
Yeah.
It's kind of what happens with this. So it's really that the single leaf pinion just has fused back together.
Wow. Yeah. Or never broke apart.
Or never broke apart. Who knows? Yeah. Right. That's such a good question.
Yeah.
It actually is so common that it's upsetting.
Thanks, Caribou, for your question. If you've got a question for us, as I said, go ahead and join the Patreon, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. If you're new to us or new to the idea of Patreon, it is a subscription service like a Netflix or like a Hulu or like an Amazon Prime. But your money doesn't go to a mega corporation. It goes to Casey and I, and you get bonus material, bonus episodes. You can even join the Cone of the Month Club, which is our favorite tier, for $10 a month, and get a unique die-cut cone sticker, conifer cone sticker, illustrated by an independent artist every month, a different independent artist, a bunch of different styles, a bunch of different species. We get them printed on stickers here in Portland. We send them to you in the mailbox.
That's right.
A little info card that tells you about that species. It's really fun. We have a lot of people telling us it's something they look forward to every month.
And I look forward to it every month.
Hey, I mean, how many things in life are like that, Casey?
Yeah, that's a good point, Alex. You know? Yeah, you're really well done.
Above that is Arbitrary Plus, our live stream tier. I just streamed 2 days ago the game Terra Nil, which is a habitat restoration game. Casey and I also have one live stream a month, and then you get one game stream with me.
Yep.
If you can't make any of them, so you think, oh, what's the point of joining? They're all on demand on our Patreon page. You can go back and watch any of them. We've had some really great talks, and we will continue to have many great talks in the future.
Yes, we sure will. Above that, you could, of course, join Generous Admission, which you just want to give as much as you can and support the show. We're absolutely grateful for all of that. But anyway, you want to interact with us, we are so happy for it. So you can follow us on Instagram. You can jump on the Patreon at whatever level you feel best. You can send us an email. Or you know what? You can just give us a listen and tell your friends.
That's right. And we also, Casey, we even have a Facebook now that we upkeep regularly.
That's right. You can find us on YouTube. Man, we've made strides. By we, I mean Alex. I've been trying to write things, and Alex is like, I will put us on the internet everywhere.
Well, we'll see if it works.
Yeah, we'll see if it works. Anyway, we are wherever you are, and we would love to share that space.
I love that, Case. And I love you for listening. Please marry me.
We both love you. We really want to take this to the next level. So please
by the next level we mean the cone of the month club.
Yeah, we do. We do that.
Some people
mean.
Call it a tier. We call it a level.
We call it a level. We it's a bit inside.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. Casey and I, from Casey Clapp, I'm Alex Croson. We will see you next time.
And for Alex Croson, I'm Completely Arbitrary.
Bye-bye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.